end of the line, three of the five Wilburys have left us, and it makes me very sad.
So the ones we have left would be Jeff Lynne. And who's the...
Bob Dylan.
And Bob Dylan, right.
Isn't it weird that Dylan's the most forgettable member? I forgot he was in that as well.
Well, because a lot of people said that Tom Petty was a Bob Dylan knockoff, and they sounded very familiar, but or very similar. A little bit. I hear a lot of the Byrds' influence in Tom Petty. Roger McGuinn, for sure.
And Petty did a lot of Byrds songs.
Yeah.
I saw them at the very first Farm Aid, which was in Champaign, and would have been like 85, maybe.
Yeah.
And the
this is the Wilbur, the Traveling Wilbur.
No.
Tom Petty. Just Tom Petty. Heartbreakers?
And the Heartbreakers worked as the backup band to Bob Dylan.
Oh, really?
Right.
And that was the first time I think they played together. And then I ended up seeing them up at Poplar Creek. They did a tour together, Dylan and Petty and the Heartbreakers.
And they were very good friends. I was listening to Greg Kot, rock critic extraordinaire, on with the Cochrane Show. And the Heartbreakers did back up Bob Dylan at a time when he was trying to rediscover himself, Mr. Protest Song, and now it's like, what do I do?
TV themes. That's what I would have done if I was Bob Dylan. Just do all TV themes.
You take the good, you take the bad.
That would have been great.
Well, that was a 90-second tribute. It was touching.
I'll never forget on the day that Roy Orbison died, David Letterman was on and he was doing a thing with the audience. I don't remember exactly what the game was, but he was out in the audience and he was interviewing people and then they had to do something and if they were right, they would win some meat. That's all I remember. So David Letterman's talking to some guy from Middle America, somewhere from Iowa or Nebraska or something, and he goes, "What do you do, sir?" And this guy looked to be kind of an older retired guy. And the guy goes, "Oh, I'm something of a traveling Wilbury." And David Letterman, without missing a beat, goes, "Oh, I understand there's an opening." I don't know why that was just so quick. I know you go, "Oh, that's too soon to be ripping on something like that," but it was well-intentioned.
Now, the Traveling Wilburys was such a super group, in my opinion, and many others.
Wasn't it?
And I watched the video to End of the Line that we opened with today, and they never toured. They did that video after Roy had already passed away,
right.
So I forgot they put his guitar in a rocking chair and then shot to a photograph of Roy Orbison.
Yeah.
You know what's cool about that group was they introduced different generations to different people.
Yep.
Like Orbison had just had a solo album, I think, out around then. And I didn't know other than Pretty Woman from the 50s or whatever.
Is that right?
Yeah. But
that was it?
Pretty much for Roy Orbison. I knew he was big then. I didn't realize he had such a beautiful voice when the Wilburys got together. So I ended up buying a couple Roy Orbison albums, too.
Was it Mystery Girl? It was something. I know that was the record because that was one of my favorite hits from it. It was released after his death. Elvis Costello did a lot of writing with Roy Orbison for that solo album that came out after he died. I loved his voice.
It would almost be impossible. I mean, I know everybody's tastes are different, but Tom Petty is one of those guys that you go, how could anyone not like this guy? He was just he was such a great songwriter, great singer, had a lot of stage presence. You know, he was just really good. It's very sad. And then, as we mentioned during the crosstalk, the chain of events were peculiar yesterday, as his death is reported and then re-reported, only to learn that it's not true. He was on life support, but not dead. And then later on in the evening, he did finally succumb. So very, very strange day.
And I just want to know how that happens. I know, as Steve Cochran mentioned, it's more important to be first than right.
Sadly.
But there has to be confirmation.
Here's what I think happened. I think someone got a tip that they had the ambulance call. And then someone, and this is only my theory, because I was watching it as it was being reported. Someone in the cop shop in L.A. told a reporter, unauthorized, that he had died.
When, in fact, he had not yet.
Because the police department said, well, we never had any official statements. We never had a call there or any of that. And yet the police department was being cited. So I think probably someone inside talked to a reporter, and that's how it got. It wasn't as if the story changed. He'd been removed from life support.
And hadn't passed yet. And I just think it's terrible. If that was my dad, I can understand why Tom Petty's daughter went crazy on her Instagram account taking down Rolling Stone.
So was she doing that when he was still alive, or was this afterward, after he had died?
No, this was prior to his demise.
So he was still alive when she kind of ranted against Rolling Stone.
Yes, okay. And she put Rolling Stone and, I don't know, Anna Kim Violet Petty. She's in her 30s, I think.
Yeah.
I think she is. I could be wrong. Hashtag Rolling Stone. My dad is not dead yet, but you're... effing magazine is your
oh, wow.
Slime has been pieces of tabloid dog. You put the worst artist on your
did
covers.
Did you write this press release for her? This sounds like a friendly email I get from you on a daily basis.
That's funny.
I'm kidding. There's less
laugh, clown, laugh.
There's less swearing in this. I'm kidding.
Some of us are sad, Bill. It's not like the actors from Mr. Ed died. You know.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm sad.
Goodbye.
I love him.
You put the worst artist on your covers, do zero research. How dare you report that my father has died just to get press because your articles and photos are so dated.
Wow.
I will blank down your throat and your family's. Try not being...
Okay, wait.
Yeah,
but that's like reading... That's like a 911 call. She obviously... is very upset.
Emotion takes over, but I still...
I mean, you could say, why was she doing that when her father was, had hours left?
Right.
She obviously was not in her normal state.
But everyone I talk to this about, Jimmy Mack and my boys and the neighbor, it's like, I keep saying it's inexcusable because he wasn't dead, and they're like, but. I said, there really is no but. It
what
was
were
not,
they going to say, but what?
But, he was found unresponsive. They did get a pulse back, from my understanding. He had a DNR, do not resuscitate. But he hadn't expired.
He was not gone yet.
So
right.
I don't think it's right. I can see her anger and her emotion.
What would his reaction have been? He wasn't cognitive enough to
right.
be reading these reports. He was in horrible shape at this time. But imagine if you had the sensibility, if he was able to use the internet or something or watch TV and see that people were reporting his death and he wasn't dead yet.
I think he would have had a sense of humor about it and said, yeah, I'm not dead yet.
Right, right.
I haven't traveled.
Right.
One of the newspapers in town famously killed Vito Marzullo once.
Right.
Former alderman in Chicago.
There's a story.
There's someone else.
Well, Joe DiMaggio, there was a story about Joe DiMaggio watching a newscast one time and learning that he had died when, in fact, he was watching television. He had not died. And before I say the name, Steve, I want to know if you remember this. There's a story about a news person here in Chicago that had reported on air that the Pope had died, that the Pope had been killed, when in reality he was getting in his ear set during a news broadcast, killed a story about the Pope. They were going to do a story about the Pope.
No,
and he
I don't
said,
know that.
I'm hearing now that the Pope has been killed, but he had not been killed, obviously.
Well, I feel really upset about it. Petty died on Monday night, 66 years old, in a statement released to People. His longtime manager said, quote, on behalf of the Tom Petty family, we're devastated to announce the untimely death of our father, husband, brother, leader, and friend Tom Petty. He suffered cardiac arrest at his home in Malibu in the early hours of this morning and was taken to UCLA Medical Center but could not be revived. He died peacefully, 8:40 p.m. Pacific time, surrounded by family, his bandmates, and friends.
Would you put him in that group of like David Bowie and Prince, and there's other singers, obviously, where you, because their music is so timeless, you never even think about that one day they won't be around, much less that they won't be around anytime soon. You go, when they do expire, it'll be way, 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 way down the road. Not now.
Not in your 60s.
No.
I mean, I could see Petty. I mean, look at Keith Richards is still alive. I know
right.
Everybody's saying that, but seriously.
Now he's hearing this, and he's shocked by what you just said.
His daughter just tweeted me. Bunch of obscenities.
So she'd be saying my dad's still alive.
Bowie and Prince were icons, though. Petty was more workmanlike.
Still say, you're right.
I saw him at least 3-4 times in concert, so he's one of my
once.
Favorites ever. But
and lucky for all the people who just saw him at Wrigley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
wrapping up his 40th anniversary tour.
Right.
Had one more show coming up in November and just played, was it the Hollywood Bowl that he just wrapped up last week?
Yeah.
I mean, in a weird way, this is tough for his family and friends and fans. But for him, I don't know, man, this is kind of the way to go. Just short, sweet, done.
Yeah. Well, But it wasn't that short and sweet. I mean, as the day played out.
Well,
I mean,
it was short.
But he was unaware of it.
Yeah,
he never probably came back from his heart attack Sunday night.
Right, right.
Never would have called a heart attack on Tom Petty. He didn't look like, your walking heart attack.
Right, yeah.
Thin.
It's unpredictable, isn't it? It's horribly unpredictable.
Just rocked how long of a tour? I mean, really, 312-981-7200. We are remembering Tom Petty today. It's a shock, I got to tell you.
It is.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. This was my anthem. This was my rock and roll song, American Girl. I mean, you think of all the hits he had.
Yeah.
Tom Petty, his death reported incorrectly yesterday. His daughter, Anna Kim Violet Petty, took to Instagram to express her frustration with
Anakin Violent Petty yesterday.
Rolling Stone. And I got to be honest with you, it's kind of a weird little irony because Rolling Stone did a lot for her dad, and he was featured on many a cover and many a stories. I just find it to be inexcusable. His death was reported before he died.
What's his song that has the lyric, like a rebel without a clue? Which song is that?
Into the Great Wide Open?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. The whole song is good, but that lyric in particular is really meaningful to me.
What was the song, Last Chance for Mary Jane? I don't know if that was the title, but
yeah.
Wendy, when did that come out? Mid-80s, late-80s, early 90s?
Song.
Because that, think of how much we've changed, because, or no, that wasn't it, where you'd say, I'll take one more toke. Remember that?
Let's roll another joint.
Let's roll another joint.
You don't know how it feels.
When that song came out, they would bleep out joint.
Right.
Think of that. And that was
in the 80s.
And 90s.
Yeah, I think in the 80s, I think.
Probably the Nancy Reagan,
Too controversial, sort of.
Yeah.
That was released 1994.
Oh, okay.
Album was Wild Flowers. I don't think the Loop or XRT bleeped that out.
I think they did. Because I don't know where else I would
have
been listening
to it. They were much more stringent. Even in the 80s, there were a couple songs where they'd have to blur out a word or two. So maybe.
I mean, I would have been, I would have heard it on XRT.
Now, Wendy, you just told me that what happened after they reported Tom Petty's death incorrectly for the first time in the afternoon, tributes were coming in from other performers.
Yep.
In a weird way, that's not the worst thing in the world had he been cognizant enough to read those tributes, because one of the saddest things about the fact that any of us die is that we don't get to hear those things. So maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if he was still alive to be able to read what all of his, his contemporaries were saying and thinking about him.
It would have been great to come back and see that.
Yeah.
It's just sad. Here's the song that 1994. Oh, wait, maybe that isn't it.
No, that was it. Yeah.
All right. Tim is on the line. You're calling from Wisconsin. Tim, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Last night was the premiere episode of Kyra Sedgwick's 10 Days in the Valley.
Yeah.
The opening scene, she opens the door, and what is she wearing?
I don't know.
Tom Petty and a Heartbreakers t-shirt.
Is she really? Wow.
Yeah. I saw that and I told the wife, you got to be kidding me.
That's incredible timing.
The timing, the first scene, unbelievable.
Wow. Wow.
That's pretty wild. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay.
Thanks, Tim.
Here, let me just real quickly.
All right. Well, let me get to the point. Let's roll. Another joint, turn the radio to laugh. I'm too long to be proud, and you don't know.
Gives me goosebumps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really great voice. Yeah, Bob Dylan, an influence for sure.
The comparison is certainly there.
But the Beatles are what was big for him.
Yeah.
So to be able to play with George Harrison and the Wilburys.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Dylan, they became friends, so obviously he wasn't ripping him off or Dylan wouldn't have been his friend.
Right.
And I'm really hearing Roger McGuinn's voice, too.
Yeah, there's that.
From the Birds.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Hi, Carrie.
Hey, guys. after you're playing, having heard American Girl 20 times, I'm going to have to watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High tonight. That's how the movie opens, but that's not what I called.
It's a great song.
Oh, right, it does. I forgot about
that. Yeah, they're doing Jumping Jack. The girls are doing Jumping Jack.
Yeah.
That's what they play, yeah. So I'll have to do that. But one thing I didn't know, I love Tom Petty, too. And one thing I didn't know is after he died, just reading a little bit, he was a big music rights activist, both for musicians and fans. When he started to get really popular, he was with a record label. I think it was MCA. And it was a really bad deal, and he basically wrote, I think it was Damn the Torpedoes, the album, the whole album, and he refused to release it, and he got out of his contract and signed with another label. And then later on, he re-signed with MCA because they were bought by somebody with a much better deal, I guess. But then they tried to do it again, but this time they wanted to charge, because now he's really popular, they wanted to charge another dollar per album, this is how old we are, over the standard price. I think it was $8.99. They wanted $9.99 because Tom Petty was popular premium. He said, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not screwing the fans. And he won that battle.
Oh, so good.
He did some other cool stuff in addition to the music, I guess. So didn't know that.
And Steve Bertrand and I were talking about this off the air. You don't know a ton about a musician, it seems, until they've passed away and you start really doing your research and all this information comes out. But he turned to music as an escape. His dad was an alcoholic and really couldn't understand why Tom was so artsy and not into sports. So he really didn't push him along in his musical career. So that's where Tom Petty used music to escape. So that was interesting to me.
Yeah, seemed like a pretty cool guy.
Sure did. Thank you, Kerry.
Thanks, guys.
Do you remember who on Saturday Night Live did a perfect impression of him, of Tom Petty?
I can picture it.
He did it a couple times.
Yes, I do know. David
Spade absolutely nailed the impression of Tom Petty, both in look and in sound.
And that was around the Don't Come Around Here No More, like Alice in Wonderland, big hat.
Yeah, and the rosy sunglasses. Yeah. Yeah, perfect.
He was really, really great. That's all I can say. Before James Spader became popular, I used to say without mascara I looked like Tom Petty, which I don't know is a compliment to either of us. But he meant a lot to me, and this one, 66 years old, is just not the age to
agreed.
Go.
Agreed. Yeah, very sad. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Left and it's Wendy Snyder. In a little while, Bridget Carey from CNET will join us to tell us what's happening in the world of technology. But first this, Wendy, a professional fighter, actually a former professional fighter, but one of the greats, one of the all-time greats, has challenged an actor, and when I say actor, I don't mean it, to a fight.
Okay, I'm going to say Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal.
How about that?
Ding, ding, ding.
How did you do that so quickly?
Because he's a non-actor who would fight.
Yes, yes.
This isn't going to happen.
He's been in the news. Steven Seagal was in the news last week because for reasons that were not explained anywhere, because I looked for it, he was in Russia. And he taped, somebody taped him or he taped himself. I don't know if you do, can you do a selfie where you just hold the camera up and videotape you? I guess you can, right?
Duh.
I didn't know that. I guess you can.
He should beat you up, too.
So he's threatened to. So he was in Russia in front of the Kremlin explaining how America has just gone soft, right? This was last week.
About the NFL taking a knee controversy?
Yeah. And in general, that America has gone soft. And this
he
is from a
terrible.
Guy who looks like he's let himself go a little soft. Wink, 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 wink. On Monday, 68-year-old boxing legend, a 68-year-old boxing legend, used Twitter to challenge a 65-year-old action movie star to a 10-round fight in Las Vegas. One-on-one, says George Foreman. I use boxing, and you can use whatever.
What if he uses a George Foreman grill against George Foreman?
That would be the saddest moment. Wouldn't it?
For George Foreman.
For George Foreman.
And all his kids, George, right. George, and Georgiana.
They're all watching the fight. All the Georges are sitting there watching the fight. And they see their dad pummeled with his own cooking device. That would be the saddest day in history. He later clarified it. George Foreman later clarified it. He said hand-to-hand combat only. Because I like that he thought about it. And he went, I just told this guy, Seagal, I'll fight him and he can use whatever. He could, you know, what if he brought katana swords or something? You got to clarify it. Hand to hand.
Yeah.
No weapons allowed, he said. He suggested that the battle would be broadcast on pay-per-view. Now, I have never in my life purchased anything on pay-per-view. I just haven't. I would consider paying for this.
You would?
Yeah, this is depending on the price point. If it was within my means, I would like to see this.
What would you like to see about this?
I don't know exactly. I don't even like fighting. I don't like boxing at all.
I like boxing, and I've done pay-per-views.
Have you? You did the last one.
No, that one I didn't do. Yeah, I couldn't support either of them, but I was more of a Vander Holyfield era and Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that I'd pay for this.
Just the absurdity of it all.
I guess, yeah.
Of seeing
would Danny Bonaducci be involved in any way, shape, or form?
He'd fight Urkel right before this big fight. with fellow boxer Floyd Mayweather earning a reported $100 million from his bout with UFC star Conor McGregor, it could mean a handsome payday for Big George. It's not. Now, they say this like it's going to happen, and this isn't going to happen. Right?
I bet Steven Seagal wants it to happen. Come on, old man.
Well, Seagal's got this weird ego.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Uncontrollable.
And if somebody calls him out, as George Foreman is doing, he responds. So I guess anything's possible. It's not currently clear what prompted George Foreman to lay down the gauntlet to the Under Siege star. Boy, they're digging. Under Siege. I think I was in third grade when that came out. It may have something to do with Seagal's recent comments about the National Football League players who protest by taking a knee during the national anthem. Seagal, a Michigan-born actor who became a Russian citizen in 2016. I didn't know that.
They can have him.
Right. Right. Please. We'll give you him and pick out a car. What do you want? Just take him. Last week, he called the pregame protests outrageous and a joke and disgusting. This according again to Steven Seagal. Seagal has yet to comment on the proposal, but Foreman's offer has certainly captured the imagination of people on Twitter, and then you can find it online. Everybody wants to see this fight.
I'm shocked you do.
I'm telling you, I am not a fan of boxing. It doesn't do anything for me. It seems very archaic to me, two guys just slugging it out. It doesn't seem right. But in this particular instance, for some reason, I go, I would sit down, I would watch this. I would like to see this.
Who would you want to win? Foreman. George Foreman, yeah.
George Foreman.
Who would want Steven Seagal to win other than Steven Seagal? I don't even think his family would want him to win.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. I remember when he hosted Saturday Night Live, it was one of those cases. The show was awful. Do you remember? And then they went back and they, you know, and any time they do a retrospect, they go, the high points of SNL and the worst. What were the worst? And everybody always brings up his week because apparently, you'll find this hard to believe, no sign of a sense of humor at all. Zero.
Yeah, I remember that fact of it, that he wasn't funny.
Not very funny. But a tremendous actor. Great thespian.
Thank God Russia has him.
yeah. Still left with Wendy Snyder. Yeah.
It's Reuben.
It's us. Stop your line dancing, Wendy. Time to do a show. Joining us right now on the telephone, because it's Tech Tuesday, is Bridget Carey from CNET to tell us everything we need to know about the world of technology. How are you, Bridget?
Hey, good to talk to you guys again.
All right, big Google event tomorrow. Let's get right to it.
Yeah. So, looks like, I mean, we've heard a lot of rumors for a while, but it's finally happening tomorrow. Two new phones. It's, you know, based on all the rumors, Pixel 2 and a larger one called the Pixel 2 XL. You know, the Pixel was pretty hot last year. These were phones made by HTC and LG. But, you know, they're very impressive cameras that reviewers loved. And this time around, it's kind of speculated to have no headphone jack. So there you go.
Why are they following in
Apple?
And they're bad.
You know, if it comes to be, I find it interesting because last year's ads all kind of poked at that. The ads even said, "Hey, it even has a headphone jack." So if it doesn't, then they're kind of even you know poo-pooing their fans for the reason that they kind of made fun of last year. So we'll see. These are always things are speculation until you finally know for sure. But it's more than just phones that Google's going to be talking about. They're also going to be talking about some smart home speakers based on early reports, something called the Google Home Mini, you know, things that can take on the Amazon Echo. And, in fact, Walmart just kind of spilled the beans that there really is going to be something called the Google Home Mini because today it accidentally published a website that opened up pre-orders for the Google Home Mini, and it said it will arrive on October 19th. And then suddenly the page went down. So,
wait, October 19th is just a couple of weeks away, Bridget. Is that, could they have that up and running in just 2 weeks?
Yeah, a lot of times it could be, you know, and we're announcing a new product, and you can buy it today for delivery in 2 weeks. Yeah,
wow.
But they try to do that to, you know, kind of keep it buzzy in the news for some items at least. And, you know, Google does have to act fast on these smart speakers. I mean, last week Amazon just unloaded a ton of her new Echo devices to talk to Alexa in your home in many different ways. So, you know, whether or not the Google Assistant's better than the Amazon Alexa Assistant almost doesn't matter at this point, because Amazon's just you know, destroying the competition with how many choices there are for a lot of different price ranges. I think this one that Google's coming out with is going to be a cheaper price point to get you started if you haven't already.
Do you have an Alexa?
I have Alexa, and I've been playing around with the Google Home. So I kind of don't always have them on and always listening.
Right.
Annoying.
Well, that's my question to you. I was at my cousin's house. I was trying to hook up her Roku to her TV, and we had to find a separate remote to do things. And as I'm pointing a remote at the TV, all of a sudden I hear, evacuate. Evacuate. There is a gas leak in the house. Carbon monoxide. Evacuate. And I'm like, what is going on? The remote from the TV triggered the carbon monoxide detector, which,
yeah,
I thought, that's a problem. Some of these things all connected, I see there being a very large problem with.
I never heard of that, and I'm going to now go talk to my person who covers that stuff. Okay, there's going to be hiccups in these learning, you know, in this time of everyone having different devices trying to talk to each other.
Evacuate.
I don't think it's necessarily a problem all the time. Like, I do find it handy when I have my hands full in the kitchen, and I'm like, oh, I need to remember to buy something on Amazon. And I just hit the button, and I go, blah, 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 and it just puts it on my list to go check it out later. Or I'm like, hey, what's a reminder for this? Or, you know, it's kind of like that ability to quickly, as you're thinking of it, you know, verbally get it out and use an assistant. But it all depends on how it works. If you're being told to evacuate all the time or can't understand what you're saying, then people are going to find it annoying, and that's that learning curve part, I guess.
It was pretty scary, I have to tell you. And then I thought the Roku was telling me to evacuate. Wait, no, I'm not going to. So
I wouldn't know what I would do in that situation.
And then, it was just bizarre. She goes, yeah, sometimes that happens. I'm like,
very calmly like that?
Yeah.
That sounds dangerous.
I know. I'm like, have you evacuated? She said, no, it happens all the time.
No.
And I said, well,
as long as the self-destruct sequence isn't initiated.
Right. All right. You want to mention something, some big news that you would like to talk about. Two words for you, people. Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh.
Yeah, I did this big feature story on the crazy, strange world of Teddy Ruxpin from the 80s and how he came to be, because he's back now. I got to check him out at the toy fair, and as the more I dug into, you know, this toy I had as a kid, I learned he had some really weird origins that tied to Disney theme parks and Chuck E. Cheese and Atari. And if you, you know, for anyone who doesn't remember, this was a huge thing in 1985, because it was the first toy that was like a talking animatronic toy that didn't just move its mouth with sound, but the tape had programming, so he opened his mouth and closed his eyes at specific points in time, like a professional puppeteer was programming it, and that code was on the special tapes he had with his audio storytelling. And after all these years, he's coming back.
But weren't people I think people were putting, like, dirty words in his mouth, weren't they? Weren't they making tapes with swear words and making Teddy Ruxpin say things he shouldn't be saying?
I know that, like, everyone kind of says that kind of stuff, but he wouldn't move his mouth.
Oh, he wouldn't?
Programming was there. Now, some people have modern times hacked him.
Yeah.
Their own programming, and I have seen that on YouTube. But for the most part, you know, the actual specific mouth movements were all part of, like, the second, you know, sidetrack of the tape itself.
We were too old, I think, Bill.
We were too old.
I don't recall. I know that there was, I'm confusing him maybe with Paddington Bear. One had a raincoat, right?
Yeah.
I was not.
Paddington Bear has a raincoat and a rain hat.
But Teddy Ruxpin. Go ahead, Bridget.
I was gonna say there were a lot of copycats when he came out. So, I mean, there was just all sorts of talking dolls, you know, within a year. But he was a smash hit right at the start. And it was kind of an interesting blend of things that made that happen that you don't see in toys today. For one, the creator, if I can go back into our little history vault.
Is it Nolan Bushnell? Is that the guy's name?
Well, that's one of the guys at Atari, but yeah. No. The actual guy who created him used to work at Disney. He in the 50s and 60s, he was making the heads for Country Bear Jamboree and painting eyes on dolls.
They do look just like it, yeah.
and he's kind of surrounded by all these audio animatronics. And if you go to the Tiki Room, you know, those talking birds, they all were programmed on magnetic tape that would just run and be, you know, rewound all the time. And he thought, why can't I put that in a toy? He's this creative guy. He's also on the side scheming up little stories about a bear in the woods having adventures. And so he starts his own company, and he wants to tinker with animatronics. And he consults for the folks at Chuck E. Cheese because of his history at Disney.
Wow.
And he patents his own way to make an animatronic human-sized costume. So he has this TV show he works with Disney, a Pooh TV show, Welcome to Pooh Corner.
Mm-hmm.
And these actors have these costumes with moving eyes and mouth, but it's all pre-programmed the night before on a tape. So the people in the costumes aren't actually moving the eyes and the mouth. And that became a large version of what later was shrunk down to be a toy. But he's trying to make it a toy. He's got this head on a stick attached to a cassette player. And I was talking to all the people who used to work there, so I got all these cool stories. But they would say, like, Jim Henson would come by, and, you know, he thought it was cool, but he at the time didn't, you know, need that stuff. And Hasbro would come by, and they go, you know, maybe we'll invest in this, but they never did. And then one of the executives at Atari, who at the time had nothing to do because, you know, he wasn't with Atari anymore, saw this and said, hey, I can make some money off this. This is great. I'm going to make a toy company that just makes Teddy Ruxpin, or just for Teddy Ruxpin, and I'm going to make other toys too. And so this guy's experience with Atari and knowing all the toy companies and knowing all the people in China, he was able to take it from this bear head on a stick to toy shelves in 6 months.
Wow. That's fast.
Meanwhile, the guy who came up with the whole idea, he's got this whole creative team he needs to, like, quickly get together. So he calls up his friends from Disney. He's got the guy who does the music for the theme parks, writing the music for the bear stories. He's got professional puppeteers, voice actors. Some of the voice actors who are all these characters in this story, which is like a Lord of the Rings level, you know, story in a way with wizards and furry things. They've done the voices for Minnie Mouse and Goofy, and one of the guys even ended up doing there's a lot of weird connections to pulp culture. One of the characters in the story later did the voice for Furby. Like, it is a story that if you read it, it has so many, like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Moments? Like this has a connection to what? And I, the more I dug, the more weird stuff I found. But, you know, he was a hit instantly because no one saw a toy that could talk directly to its child and had that level of quality. What the guy did, too, because he was such a good marketing guy from Atari, he said, you know, when you go to a toy store, I'm going to have a demo set up so that parents would immediately, like, see this thing and be enchanted by it because, you know, obviously it's the parents who really make it a hit, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and he put all this money into commercials, and then, boom, that very same year, you know, it was a top-selling toy.
And don't forget the Mark Wahlberg movie, Ted, is pretty much Teddy Ruxpin. I mean, they changed a thing or two, but it's based on Teddy Ruxpin.
Yeah, and I think there's another movie that is coming out. It's like one of those Sundance movies, so maybe it's like already out but coming out to other places soon, kind of based on the same thing. So it was kind of a cultural moment. And after that, everyone started trying to make talking bears and dolls,
yeah,
of all sorts that would move their mouth and eyes and have stories, but nothing really had that same quality. He kind of burned out fast for a many number of reasons. In 3 years' time, the toy company went bankrupt. They were investing in all sorts of things. They made the first laser tag, but then they had some media press trouble when kids were having issues with laser tag. I mean, it's kind of a dark story, but a kid got shot and
died
because someone thought it was a real gun.
Wow.
And they never really recovered from that.
No, of course not.
All right, well...
And, Yeah, so it has a little bit of a dark side, but they kept trying to bring him back, and now finally a new company is doing it with a new twist.
Bridget Carey from CNET and her expose on Teddy Ruxpin, where can we find this?
CNET.com/Teddy-Ruxpin.
CNET.com/Teddy-Ruxpin. Any mention of Five Nights at Freddy's involved in this Teddy Ruxpin thing?
No, but here's a cool creepy thing. The guy who puppeted Teddy Ruxpin went on to puppet Chucky and also...
from Child's Play?
Yeah, from Child's Play 3. And also he did Salem the Talking Cat from Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Wow.
There's a lot of weird pop culture ties that Teddy Ruxpin has brought to our world.
Guess so. Bridget, thanks so much. We'll talk to you in a week.
Hey, thanks.
Talk That's Bridget you. Carey. See her at CNET.com. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Luff and it's Wendy Snyder. In studio with us right now, it's our pal, Mike McNamara. He's the co-founder. He's the executive producer of the Midwest Independent Film Festival. And on the first Tuesday of each month, Mike comes by and tells us what we can expect.
This is one of the biggest nights of the year. Thank you guys for having me.
Hi, Pally.
Always appreciate it. Hey, pal. I think I like pal better than some of the other things I've been called.
Our monthly visitor?
Over the course of our storied history together. Tonight, one, we're at a special venue. We're at the Music Box Theater, 3733 North Southport.
Gorgeous.
Big house to fill, historic, gorgeous theater. And we have one of the biggest indie films to come out of Chicago in a long time. Mm-hmm. It's called Signature Move. It's funny. It's heartfelt.
Would somebody call this a crown jewel, Mike, if they wanted to? Could it be called a crown jewel?
I did mention that off the air. Yes, I would say this is definitely one of the crown jewels of the Chicago indie film scene in the past year. It's been winning festivals literally all over the country, and now it's here. It's making its Chicago premiere, and you can see it tonight at the Midwest Independent Film Festival. And I brought the two lead actors. We have Fawzia Mirza, who's also co-writer and producer, and we have Sari Sanchez here.
Fawzia, welcome back. Sari, nice
Thank
to
you.
Meet you.
Hi, great to meet you. Thanks for having us.
We're throwing around the term crown jewel. That's some high praise. What is making this movie a crown jewel?
Well, other than Mike trying to colonize us, it's actually... I agree otherwise. What's really exciting is it's a story about a Pakistani Muslim lesbian played by me who is taking care of her TV-obsessed mother played by a very famous Bollywood heroine. And she's got two secrets from her mom. One is that she's falling in love with a Mexican woman played by Sari and that she's taken up wrestling as a hobby. So I can definitely tell you there is no other film that you've ever seen in the entire universe that touches on all of these topics at the same time.
You're combining all of them, man.
I can't help it. That's just what I am.
There was a Mary Pickford movie in the 1930s that came dangerously close. Very close.
Mary Pickford sounds suspiciously not brown.
No? All right. All right. You know a little about this story because the story is, it's your story. It happened to you a bit, huh?
Yeah, there's definitely an inspiration in the relationship between a Pakistani woman falling in love with a Mexican woman. That was inspired by me actually falling in love with a wonderful Mexican woman in the city of Chicago starting at a street festival in the summer. And
it's the best place to meet someone.
It's the best place
it is.
To meet
Oh, those
someone.
Street festivals.
You know, like night goes into later night, goes into morning. And so, we found all these connections across our seemingly different communities. And it felt as though, you know, it felt like a really great relationship to share in a film. And, you know, Sari said yes when we asked her if she would play the lead.
I'm sure it's kind of meaningful to be able to get your story out in into a film. But is it also something that... scares you a little bit to open up so much?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's obviously terrifying because, you know, there's a lot of trolls on the internet. There's a lot of trolls in reviews. There's a lot of people who don't want you.
I'm right here. I'm right here, Fawzia. I'm right here. By the way, I don't know if I said the name of the movie.
Yes.
Signature Move. Did I say it?
Yes.
Signature Move. And as we're talking, you should go buy tickets now at MidwestFilm.com tonight, 6 p.m. at Music Box. But I just wanted to...
Yeah, no, I appreciate the interruption. Mike, I love you. But, no, of course it's scary. It's scary anytime you put yourself out there, but that's kind of part of the work that we do as artists is, and I think it helps, open the space for other people to tell their stories and changes the narrative, especially for in this political climate and given these groups of people that we're talking about.
Is the relationship that's depicted in Signature Move, is it still ongoing? This is the first part of my question.
Definitely not between the actors. We are very good friends. And between the characters that, you know, the inspiration, she's a Mexican woman who was one of my best friends and continues to be one of my best friends and was at the world premiere at South by Southwest and, you know, has definitely cried many tears being like, I'm so glad I know you.
But she's okay with her story also being depicted on film. You had to check. I'm guessing you cleared it with her before you.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a biopic, but there's a lot of things that didn't actually happen. The thing that did definitely happen in real life is that after we'd been hanging out for 12 hours, I forgot her name. And that is a scene in the movie.
Oh.
And she's so lovely, and she's been so supportive of the film, and it was so fun to meet her. I met her at the end of filming, and it was she wasn't so different as as I thought she might be. She was wonderful.
Was it better, Sari, to meet her when you were done filming, or could you have picked out more about her character had you met her prior?
Gosh, no. You know, I mean, it was so well written. This was co-written also by Lisa Donato, and it was just so well written that everything was there. You know, this woman was a fully developed woman in terms of being a business store owner and all these other things. She was, you know, a sister and a daughter and a friend. And it was just so well written. It made my job and everyone's job, I think, much easier.
A lot of women on this crew you were telling us about there.
Yeah, this is really a fully female-driven production, and the director is Jennifer Reeder, who I think we've had on the show before. Her last film was at Sundance, and then we premiered it here at the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Line producers, Angie Gaffney, a lot of the other cast. We have Chadine Alvarez and much of the other cast, Audrey Francis. We could go on and on, but this is... And I think that was by design. I'll let Fazia, comment on that.
Yeah.
But it's not something where it's like, okay, well, you have to be a woman or you have to be a woman. It's just we have so many talented women that are perhaps being underrepresented in this community and in this industry that Fazia and Jennifer and their team just put their foot down and said, okay, let's show you what we can do. Mm-hmm. And they have one of the top, you know, indie films in the country. And, you know, now you can come see it tonight and see for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. We have, like, you know, Jen Higelke, one of the producers, mm-hmm. Nabila Rashid, one of the producers. And I think there was some intentionality that Chicago is not a place just of, you know, these men who are telling these stories, but there are these amazing neighborhoods of people, neighborhoods of stories that are not being told, and we want to tell them, and we want to tell them as a community of these really strong women. And Jennifer Reeder's perspective is also just such a great factor in telling that story, too.
I will ask this to both of you. Is it weird seeing your faces so big on a giant screen? Are you super critical of your performance or yourself?
Here's the thing. I think that the most famous people in the world have the biggest heads. So, you know what I mean? Like, and as a woman, you want to be all eyes and a neck. You know what I mean? Like, all eyes. And so the bigger the head, the bigger my head looks, the more famous I think I have the potential to be. So it's great. And also, as someone who's been creating her own content, being someone who's like, not the director, but playing the role of everything constantly, you have to be able to get comfortable watching yourself or else you won't make your own stuff.
Yeah, it's always a little strange, I think, but the story is so important and it becomes bigger, you know, than anything else. And I think what's so interesting about this movie and so cool about it is that you see all kinds of pockets of neighborhoods of Chicago that aren't normally represented as well. And just the idea that you're, you know, finding the commonalities between a Pakistani culture and a Mexican culture is not something you see every day. And there's wrestling, too. There's Lucha Libre. I don't know if we mentioned that.
Let's talk about it.
Well, and by the way, Sari's amazing in the film. So, like, I know she's...
Side note.
Yeah, side note here. No big deal. I mean, she may not love to always see herself, but a lot of people do. Because she is amazing and phenomenal just such a talent. And it was such a joy to be able to work with somebody who was, like, all in. Because sometimes you work with actors who are like, I don't know about this. And it's like, no, this woman is someone who is committed to every role she takes. And so it was so cool that she did this.
Sarah, you don't wrestle in the movie, do you?
No, I don't.
Not professionally.
Fazia sure does. Not professionally. There is a little bit of wrestling in the movie.
Some romantic wrestling.
There's romantic wrestling.
Fazia, you had wrestled in the past.
No,
you had me
not professionally.
No.
So the wrestling was inspired. It's such a fun, also Chicago thing. Is I was on a late night comedy talk show that Jamie Campbell used to throw called Talk Hard up in Lakeview, and I was there playing another character I used to do, and a retired former WWE wrestler, Lisa Marie Verone, who was Victoria, was on the show, and she was one of the other guests, and she did her finishing move or her signature move on the show, and it was so cool. She did it, and she literally said the line, you know, to the host, don't move or I'm going to get hurt, and I don't want to get hurt. And that is now in the movie. And she did this moonsault move, and I was like, how have we not told these women's stories? They're amazing. And so that felt like another way to put a spin on the Muslim character and find another connection between the two cultures.
And we have real wrestlers. I mean, just these amazing women who are professional wrestlers, and then amazing stunt people, of course, who helped Fozzie out a little bit.
I had a body
in her wrestling.
The film is called Signature Move. You can see it tonight at the Music Box Theater. Go to MidwestFilm.com. All the information's there. Some are calling it a crown jewel, Mike. I've heard people throw the term crown jewel around. Phil Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Mike McNamara is here along with some of the cast of Signature Move. If you like your international alternate lifestyle wrestling movies, this is the film for you.
It's a genre.
You sold that about as well as you sold that supper club a few seconds ago.
I was actually very interested in the butterfly prawn.
I was going to go to Wisconsin, Bill.
Let's go.
It's the magic.
We can have the rap party there. Aside from our current guests, this film, Signature Move, has a pretty impressive roster of actors and actresses.
Really impressive roster, and some names you know and some that you don't. I'll start with one that most of you listening do know, a gentleman named Mark Hood, who was a finalist on The Voice, biggest show in America.
Team Pharrell.
He was on Team Pharrell, made it to the finals, and is a Chicago guy, and he's got a great role in this film, and he'll actually be at the screening tonight.
Tonight, yes.
So, I don't know if we can get him to sing or not, but we'll give it a shot. Maybe if we prep him. I think we're going
to
prep him.
Yeah, you talk to him.
I'll
does he sing in the movie?
I don't think he does.
No,
not.
But there's always hope in the future.
There's
you
always
know?
Hope.
A sequel.
There's always hope. And beyond Mark, this is an actress that is the Meryl Streep of India, one of the most acclaimed actresses in India, and she came here to be a part of this film, to be a part of Fauzia's vision. Her name is Shabana Azmi, and she is spectacular in this film. You've never seen her. You've never seen her in an American film, and this is your chance to see her, and she has been getting acclaimed for this role and obviously for her storied career. So
what
this
did
is
you
a
have
night.
To do
yeah.
to get the Meryl Streep
How'd
of India in
That's
your
right.
movie?
Oh, my gosh. A lot of... anyway, a lot of... No. actually, I mean, she has done a lot of sort of crossover films in some ways. Like, she was in a very famous film called Fire, which was a Canadian-made Indian film by Deepa Mehta, which was a huge success. That was a 20 years ago film. It was the only other kind of queer or lesbian film she ever made. But then, like, the most recent huge films were, like, Reluctant Fundamentalist, Midnight's Children. You know, she plays the mother roles in those. But it's sort of a... getting her, she's such an activist, and she's someone who believes in art over everything, and believes in the little guy, and believes in the importance of social justice storytelling, whether it's comedic or dramatic. So I got her email from a friend, or her agent's email, asked her to look at the script. She did. I met her in person when she was here in a suburb of Chicago, and eventually she said yes. And we got movie married.
She plays your mother in this?
She plays my mother in this.
You're intimidated at all? You're acting against the Meryl Streep of India.
And see, that's the thing. Not acting against, acting with and becoming better because of.
Yeah.
She literally makes everything I do better. I was like, oh my God, you're just sitting there. You're amazing.
That's how I feel about you, Bill.
Thank you.
I mean,
I'm the soupy sales of Berwyn.
I say it jokingly, but there's some truth to that. You get better when you work with someone who's good.
I mean, they say that about, like, sports and, you know, any kind of athletic thing. Like, play with somebody better than you so that you can learn and get better yourself.
She elevated the whole film, I think. And Jennifer Reeder, the director of the film, always talks about how she would just let the cameras keep rolling to the point where at times Shabana would be the one to say,
cut.
Oh, really?
She was such a she's so tremendously talented. I mean, you could watch her do anything for hours. She's that astounding to watch.
Yeah.
And tonight, you know, tonight we have the Chicago premiere of Signature Move at Music Box, historic Music Box. And, you know, people these days, they don't go out to the theaters as much, you know, but when you do, you want it to be a special night. And this is the deal. You know, this is 100% Chicago made. If you want to see more films getting made in Chicago, the film industry, the television industry is at an all-time peak here in Chicago. If you want to see great films like this one getting made in Chicago and not in some other state or city, you got to come out and support these films, buy them, buy tickets, pack the house for them. So,
and it's a super fun event. I mean, there's the producers panel beforehand, which features some of the actual Chicago producers who invested in the movie, and like really iconic people like Hugh Schultz is going to be there.
Eddie Linker.
They make
Sundance
films and
right. So we're going to open the night with that investors panel. We're going to have Chicago premiere of Signature Move. There's a Q&A with Fazia and the rest of the cast and crew after the film, and then we're going to have some drinks after. So it's really a fun full night. We'll be passing.
I know this is your hope, but after seeing Signature Move, do you think that this will help people learn how to accept differences a little more?
Well, I feel like that if I didn't believe that that was possible, I wouldn't make anything. And I think that, you know, it's so beautiful to have, you know, people of the world, whether they're female or Muslim or Mexican or Pakistani or queer, come up to me and say, thank you for making this. But what was so cool is we did a special event screening with like this all very like wrestling crowd of guys. And this guy came up to me who drove 600 miles from Nashville to see the movie and come to this like Shimmer Women's Wrestling event that Marley Pop Productions did with us. And said to me, you know what? Wrestling is all about inclusivity, and so is your movie. Oh. It's the same. And I was like, I love you.
Wow.
What a compliment. That's
beautiful.
Right.
Beautiful.
And so I think there is this opportunity that we do exist in all of these spaces sometimes at the same time. And it's really exciting that people are seeing that and experiencing that. So yeah, that's definitely the hope. And the relatability is definitely there.
How are the action figures selling?
You know what? My producers haven't shown them to me, and I am a producer, so let's see.
Pre-order sales.
I just hope my my thigh fat was definitely cut out.
They tone it down.
I'm not interested in that.
The film again is called Signature Move. It's part of the Midwest Independent Film Festival tonight. You can see it at the Music Box. It's the Chicago premiere. It's a 6 o'clock start. Mm-hmm. Go to MidwestFilm.com. All the information is there. Thank you all for being here. Greatly appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
Thank you so much. I see you tonight.
Thanks, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. We're at 312-981-7200. If you would like to throw a question or a comment our way, you certainly can. Yesterday was obviously a very challenging day for a lot of people, a very, very difficult day in the aftermath of what took place at the music festival in Las Vegas. One of the professions that you would imagine would be very tough to handle on a day like yesterday was being a late-night talk show host. Their job is to go out and kind of make light of that day's news, and it's a story that you couldn't make light of. There was nothing funny, nothing amusing about what took place in Las Vegas. So I don't know if everybody got a chance to hear some of the monologues last night, but I heard bits and pieces of everybody's, and everybody who hosted one of the late-night talk shows I thought did a very, very good job of acknowledging the fact that this was not a time to be amused or be funny. It was a time to reflect on the day's events. Conan O'Brien did a fantastic job. Seth Meyers did a fantastic job. Everybody I saw did. But I want to single out Jimmy Kimmel for the reason. I watched him last night because I knew that Jimmy Kimmel grew up in Las Vegas, and I knew the city, you know, holds a very dear place in his heart. And he came out extremely emotional, as you would imagine. Here's a little bit of the beginning of the monologue from Jimmy Kimmel last night.
Well, hello, everyone. Here we are again in the aftermath of another terrible, inexplicable, shocking and painful tragedy, this time in Las Vegas, which happens to be my hometown and Cleto's hometown, Cleto Sr.'s hometown. And as you know, at least 59 people are dead. Hundreds of people were wounded in what they say was the deadliest mass shooting in modern American history, coming about a year and a half after the previous deadliest mass shooting in modern American history in Orlando, where 49 people lost their lives. And Of course, we pray for the victims and for their families and friends, and we wonder why, even though there's probably no way to ever know why a human being would do something like this to other human beings who are at a concert, having fun and listening to music. Jason Aldean was on stage. Luke Combs, who was here with us tonight, he played the show too, and obviously no one could have ever expected that something terrible would happen, but it did. A very sick person smuggled 17 guns into his hotel room and smashed out the windows, started firing indiscriminately from the 32nd floor into a crowd of 22,000 people across the street. And as a result of that, this morning, we have children without parents and fathers without sons, mothers without daughters. We lost two police officers. We lost a nurse from Tennessee, a special ed teacher from a local school here in Manhattan Beach. And it's the kind of thing that it makes you want to throw up or give up. It's too much to even process.
You can hear it in his voice. He's just, you know, he's
heartbroken like we all are.
Yeah.
He's very real, isn't he?
Yeah.
He really is.
I look at the progression, Kim. I Johnny Carson is the best that ever did that job. He just is. And I don't remember ever a time where Johnny came out, even during, you know, dark times, where Johnny came out and addressed something as realistically as not just Jimmy Kimmel did, but Stephen Colbert did it yesterday, Jimmy Fallon did it, everybody did it yesterday. You had to do it. You couldn't ignore what took place.
And Conan O'Brien, what he said, too, is when he first started his talk show, was it like 93 or somewhere around there?
Yeah.
You didn't have to do this because it wasn't happening with such regularity.
Right. You saw the story about when Conan O'Brien went into work yesterday, he said one of his producers handed him a file. And what was in the file was what he had said after similar tragedies, after Sandy Hook took place a while ago and other similar tragedies. And Conan O'Brien said, it struck me that it's now become so commonplace that we have to have a file of what's said after such a situation, that's how sad it's become. Here's a little more of Jimmy Kimmel yesterday addressing what went on in Las Vegas, his hometown.
You know what will happen? We'll pray for Las Vegas. Some of us will get motivated. Some of us won't get motivated. The bills will be written. They'll be watered down. They'll fail. The NRA will smother it all with money. And over time, we'll get distracted. We'll move on to the next thing. And then it will happen again and again. And last night, the White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said this is not the time, or actually it was today, this morning, she said it was not the time for political debate. And I don't know, we have 59 innocent people dead. It wasn't their time either. So I think now is the time for political debate.
What can we do? What can I do? That's what I get where he's coming from. And I know he's speaking from his heart and this can't continue, but how can we stop this?
Well, he goes on in the monologue, and I don't have a clip of this, but he shows certain politicians on both sides, on the Republican side and on the Democratic side, who had a chance to vote down gun restriction laws, to change them, to make it more difficult for various people. He goes into detail, and he talks about how the law changed less than a year ago, where people with various medical conditions, mental problems, it became easier for them to get guns, not harder, but actually easier for them to get guns. And he says there's plenty of politicians that, you know, voted the way you would think you would vote in something like this, but these people didn't. And he shows pictures of various politicians. So I guess it's our job to figure out who exactly they are. And if they are in the pocket of the NRA, and they sure seem to be in the pocket of the NRA, then I guess our first move is to find out who they are and not keep voting them in office.
But this guy got around it. I think I just saw on CNN, you were looking at the screen with me, he had reportedly 43 guns.
Yeah.
That's not...
Right.
Listen, I don't believe in owning a gun and I never will. And if that makes me a target, so be it. But people who do it legally, this does not represent them.
No,
so that's
it doesn't.
What I mean. I don't know what we can do to help. I wish this would stop. I was just going to say if you have a point on the guns.
Well, I'm just saying essentially what he said, and I thought about this all day yesterday, is the vicious circle of us all being shocked when something like this happens, because it is. It's shocking that somebody would do this. he took out strangers. He didn't have a grudge against any of those people. He just got up on a balcony and started shooting. So the cycle is we're all shocked yesterday and we're all shocked today and we'll all be shocked tomorrow. And for most of us, you know, that shock will dissipate. But not for the families and friends of those people.
Absolutely not. And the only good thing that I'm seeing out of this is all these heroes that have come forward. A couple of them, according to CNN, Amy McAslin and her roommate, Crystal Goddard, they dove under a table as the gunfire rained down on the concert goers. And McAslin said, a gentleman, I don't know his name, he completely covered me. He had been shot. But he laid on top of me, covered my face, and said, I've got you.
Yeah.
And helped to protect her. There was someone else who, a couple that had gotten away, to the airport and they got in their truck. Lindsay Paget and her fiance, Mark J. They had gotten their pickup truck and a stranger hailed them down and said, guys, we need your truck. We just need to get people over to the hospital. Is there any way we can use your truck? A stranger's asking them this, and they said, sure. And they helped load stretchers onto their pickup truck.
Nice.
It's terrible that an event like this has to bring people together. Why can't we come together before something like this happens?
I don't know the answer to that.
And there are more heroes that you're hearing about. And if you'd like to read about them, just Google search it, because there are so many people who truly helped other people.
There was a story about a vet who said, I stole a Jeep. Because I needed to get people out of there to a hospital. So here's a little more of Jimmy Kimmel from last night.
We have a major problem with gun violence in this country, and I guess they don't care. And if I'm wrong on that, fine, do something about it, because I'm sick of it. And, you know, I want this to be a comedy show. I hate talking about stuff like this. I just want to, you know, laugh about things every night. But that, it seems to be coming increasingly difficult lately.
That's true.
I agree with them 100%.
I give them all, everybody who addressed this yesterday, I give them nothing but credit because, you know, their job is obvious. It's to make us forget about stuff like this and make us laugh and entertain us and, you know, talk about, you know, the light side of the news. But every one of those guys last night went out of their way to, you know, condemn the violence. And how can you not condemn the violence? But I don't know. It's just, it's so frustrating when it happens with the regularity that it happens. And yeah, we're all shocked by it, but it's going to happen again and again and again.
Unfortunately, you're right with that. In the midst of the shooting, 18-year-old Addison Short tried to make a run for it. Her knee gave way because she got shot, and she just screamed out, I can't run. She dove into a bar for cover. She kept hearing gunshots. They weren't stopping. And as CNN interviewed her from her hospital bed, she said just a stranger, a man came up, used his belt to wrap her leg in a tourniquet, and rushed her to safety. He just picked me up and threw me over his shoulder, and the man carried her to a taxi that took her to a hospital. And she's being treated, scariest experience of her life. So the heroes, there are many heroes these stories. And people, you know, have been going like crazy in droves to give blood because really that's all we can do right now.
Right. If you want to find another sickening angle to this, here's an obvious one. The stock companies of several gun companies rose dramatically yesterday because the cause and effect of this is people assume, oh, what if there are gun restrictions? We better load up now while we can. So gun companies benefited from this yesterday. Think about that.
I don't want to think about that, Bill. I really don't. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
That's not the majority of the people. That's not how we live. And we need to toughen the laws that are already on the books.
So why aren't we?
That's a good question. We don't need to make new laws. We just need to strengthen the laws that are on the books.
The laws have become more lax, not less. The laws have become easier, not harder.
Well, and then the courts aren't actually enforcing them either.
Right. Right.
I mean, this guy was not following the laws, as Bill mentioned, because...
He doesn't care.
But why would you be able to purchase 42 guns? Is that something that you could do as a card-carrying member of the...
You don't even have to buy them. You can make those guns. A lot of people just make them. You don't go out and buy Bushmasters. you can make a gun for a quarter of the price, and it's a hobby at that point. It's not a hobby to make 40 of them, but it's a hobby to actually make the gun.
Well, again, this person does not represent people who do follow laws, and perhaps, Bill, if he couldn't have had access to guns, maybe he would have turned to a plane. I don't know.
None of the criminals follow the law.
That's a good point.
Dan, thanks.
Thank you very much. Should we take one more?
Yeah, sure.
Sarah, go ahead. You have the last comment on this.
I was flabbergasted when I heard this morning on one of the cables. I think it was MSNBC. You could take every war that we had from World War I through Afghanistan through Iraq. There have been more civilians killed with guns. I think it was 1.5 million than all the wars combined. Is that not nonsense?
It's awful.
Is that not nonsense? Nobody's talking about taking away guns. We're talking about taking away weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
Exactly.
I knew nobody who got shot in Vegas. My heart bleeds for those people. When's it going to happen here in Chicago? Right? We've been so blessed. We've been so lucky. People need to wake up. We don't want your guns. We want the weapons of mass destruction. They said there's a bill in Congress. They want to pass a bill that you can put silencers on these things.
I heard that. What good does that do anyone?
Is that crazy? Thousands would have been killed if they would have put a silencer on that gun.
You're absolutely right. Sarah, thank you.
I had no idea where it was coming from. It's so sad. People are so ignorant these days. They don't want to listen. They don't want to learn. They don't have empathy for anybody but themselves. I don't understand it.
Sarah, thank you for your call and your compassion. We appreciate it.
What a startling statistic. 1.5 million people, civilians, innocents killed of all the wars combined.
It's awful.
It's a hideous statistic. Sarah, thank you so much. Hang in there. And Glenn is on the line with us. Glenn, you get the final call.
Yes. Okay.
We don't have a lot of time here, so go ahead and make your point.
Oh, my point is, in responding to a couple of your other callers, we don't need to just enforce our current legislation. We need new legislation. We need to eliminate assault rifles of any type, the ammunition that feeds them, and have proper background checks. I don't want to take people's guns away. But these guns are meant to kill people. I've shot an AR. They're a lot of fun to shoot. But sometimes you have to give up something to get something better. And just one other thing. I wish people would stop referring to this guy as a gentleman.
Yeah, he didn't show that. Yeah, he had the tendency to
right.
be a gentleman.
You're right, Glenn.
Thank you, Glenn.
I'm guilty of that. Thank you for calling. A great idea. The silencer issues was so it would be kinder and gentler on hunters' ears. Put the earplugs in. I mean, are you going to make electric guitars silent because it's not good for your ears?
Right.
It's stupid.
I was listening to Ro's show yesterday, and they were talking about the same subject. And apparently one of Donald Trump's sons has invested heavily in the company that does the silencers. So he was pushing for the silencers because it would actually benefit him financially. That's the reason he was behind the silencers. But this isn't a problem of silencers. This is a problem of the weapons themselves. The silencers is a side issue that certainly should be addressed at some point, but the major issue is this guy just mowed down all those people. That's what needs to be addressed, not the silencers.
God bless us all. That's all I got to say.